Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and I want to thank you all for waking up this morning and joining the show. As I was telling my guests, I know most people want to sleep in on Saturday morning, so I just want to say thank you again for joining me. Today we have five wonderful guests. I'm just amazed at the wealth of talent and experience and also mentorship that we have today on the show. We have Uva Cole. She's the Vice President of Intake at the Big Brothers Big Sister Southeastern Pennsylvania. Dr. Shireen Lewis, she's the Executive Director of EduSeed and the founder of Sister Mentors Program. We have Dr. Taffy Anderson. She's a OBGYN. She's also a breast cancer survivor. She has been on the show before talking about that issue. We have Cheryl Ann Wadlington. And Cheryl, again, tell me how to pronounce the name of the organization.
It is the Evalore House.
Evalore House. She also works with young women. And Terry, you said you have some other people with you this morning?
Yes, I do, Joy. I have Macy Lewis. She's 18 years old. She's been in our program since the inception of it, and she's also the president of our youth council. And I have Mr. Will Coney. He's a board of director.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for both joining us also. I just want to start off that I did have a show about the state of young black males. And originally I was contacting Dr. Lewis, Dr. Shireen Lewis, and just asking her about being on the show because I thought it was also important to talk about what's going on in young black females' lives. And then the idea just expanded. I said, well, there's so many wonderful programs out there people may not be aware of. You know, how can I get them all in one spot so that for people who are seeking help or seeking support for the young ladies in their lives or in their communities will know that there is support out there and there are young black females definitely succeeding in today's world with a lot of support, of course. I wanted to start off first, since Dr. Lewis, she has to leave us a little early with the issue of education. According to the National Center for Education Statistics, the school completion rates for blacks increased between 1971 and 2008 from 59% to 88%. So that's some good news there. The gap between blacks and whites did decrease from 23% to 6%. So, again, good news. So there's a lot of myths sometimes we have that blacks are not completing their education, not completing high school, but it seems that things have changed. In 2008, the high school completion rates for blacks and Hispanics, though, unfortunately remained below those of whites and Asians. So, again, there have been increases in some areas, but still disparities in others. Dr. Lewis, why don't you tell us a little bit about your program and how you help young black females and how they continue to help other females. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Joy. Sister Mentors is a nonprofit program, as you mentioned previously. And what we do is we help young girls of color in elementary, middle, and high schools mentor, encourage them, inspire them to stay in school and go on to college. And these girls, most of them are from low-income families and will be the first generation in their families to go on to college. And we have helped two groups of girls to go to college so far. You know, one group that just started fall, schools like Duke University, Goucher College, Bates College, Virginia Commonwealth and Northern Virginia Community College. So, you know, I think there's a lot of long-standing problems, and most of it is connected to the low expectations and low capacity of our public school system. But I also think there's also a lot of reason for hope.
Yes, definitely. Now, how would someone get in contact with you about your program? What's your phone number for your program?
My phone number is 202-778-6424. That's 202-778-6424. And they can also go to our website at sistermentors.org, and they can send me an email through that website.
Again, that's our website. It's Sister Mentors, that's plural, sistermentors.org. I want to talk to Terry J. Brown. What do you think some of the reasons that it's difficult for young females, black females in school, maybe completing high school and going on and completing college? Ms. Brown, what do you think about that?
Well, I think the lack of standards, morals, and ethics being conveyed to our young ladies, the lack of that is one of the reasons why they don't aspire to do anything more. As when I was coming up, you know, although my support systems weren't that strong, you can go anywhere and hear about morals, ethics, and standards, be it, you know, the women of, you know, that are, were older, the generation, my mother's generation. But we don't have anyone. We're living in a world where anything goes. And anything can happen, and everything is open, and you do what you want. And as a result, you know, they're not being pointed towards higher education or, you know, things of that nature, or how to raise a family, or how to, you know, value yourself. It was, being, you know, they're being dominated by, you know, the media and the mixed messages that the media sends and that pop cultural thing. That's the problem. I think systemically that's the problem.
Uva, I want to bring Uva in the conversation here, and that because you brought up, Terry, the issue of morals and ethics, and Uva Coles is vice president of Intake over at Big Brothers Big Sisters Southeastern Pennsylvania. That program is a wonderful program. My daughter actually had a big sister, and she had a big sister for about a year and a half, and I think it was a a great influence on her life. So in terms of morals, Uva, what do you teach the people that go out and connect with the children? Do you have some training sessions for them at Big Brothers, Big Sisters to get them prepared to deal with these young people?
Hi, Joy. Good morning to you and everyone else on the panel and your listeners. Glad to hear that you are very acquainted with our program. And in terms of what we do with training with our volunteers, it starts even before we expose them to any kind of training. It starts with our recruitment and interview process and making sure that we are engaging the right people to participate in our program. Now, of course, child safety is first, so we take care of the background checks and things of that nature, but we also do very extensive interviews with them where we really learn a lot about their commitment to children, the things they've been exposed to, their own morals and ethics and values. I think values for us becomes a very good speaking point and a platform used to better understand who's coming into the program, where they stand in life, what their beliefs are. And we try to match those values with that of the families, with those of the families we are matching them with. So what we don't want to have is a disconnect where a family has certain core values and we're bringing in someone to mentor their child who has completely different beliefs. So our role is not to determine what values are appropriate or inappropriate. Our values are to make sure that we are matching people who have like values. And once we do that, the relationship very naturally evolves. The children feel connected to their mentors, and the families also feel that they have extended themselves and brought someone into their families who shares those same values, those same core ethics, and they can continue to build and prop and support these children.
I want to bring Ms. Waddington into the conversation when you talk about values and also, I guess, women respecting themselves. Tell us a little bit, Ms. Waddington, about how you teach the young ladies in your organization in terms of respecting themselves and their space and their self-esteem.
Yes, good morning, and good morning to everyone. The Evalore House is a nonprofit organization that nurtures teen girls to help them achieve their full potential and become productive members of their community by developing social and academic competence. And our motto is motivating girls for character and excellence. And we do this because we recognize that girls are in crisis. And we do this through personal development programs. In these programs, the girls are involved in a 12-week curriculum. and they are involved in a learning experience such as financial literacy, self-esteem, which basically helps them discover who they are and what makes them special, what is beauty, what is the body image, internet etiquette, because we know how teen girls are behaving on the internet, setting and reaching academic and career goals, how to land a job and keep it, and all of our programs that we do are research-based, and what we have found is that outside of education, we see that girls, even at the college level, aren't prepared in certain areas, which will allow them not to get their foot in the door when it comes to landing that job. And we see this over and over again to the point where we've even contacted universities. And we're talking about girls, black girls.
Right. I want to bring Dr. Lewis into the conversation again because I know she has to get off. Again, Dr. Shireen Lewis, she's the founder of Sister Mentors Program. Her website is www.sistermentors.org. And Dr. Lewis, you are you have a PhD. I mean, how do we talk to young ladies of even the idea of, can I get my PhD? Is it possible? I mean, I'm just barely getting through high school. What is it? What are some of the key messages that you tell them when they come into your program?
Well, what the mentors in our program, because when we talk about system mentors, we talk about mentoring on all kinds of different levels. And so the mentors for the girls in our program are women women of color who are working on dissertations for doctorates. So we put these women who are working on dissertations for doctorates and those who we help to get the doctorate, we put these women in front of these girls. And we say to these girls, these women were where you were once. These women, like you, some of them from a low-income family, some of them first generation in their family to go to college, these are the women we want you to, these are the women who are going to mentor you, these are the women who we want you to listen to. And what we do is we have these women tell stories about their own lives, their own academic path. How did they come up from kindergarten to the doctorate? And these are really very powerful stories. And it's all about perseverance. It's all about, you know, it doesn't matter what obstacle comes in your way. Once you have your goal, once you have your dream, you are going to let nothing or nobody stand in your way to get there. So these girls are seeing these men working on dissertations for doctorates, and they're also seeing them as get the dissertation done and they get the doctorate. They're seeing them. We have a celebration for the women. The girls are invited, and they're seeing these women who are completing their education and going on to do bigger and better things. So our girls know what doctorates are. They know what a PhD is. They know what a dissertation is. So they already know that if this is the path, and this is the path they want to go to, whether it's going to be professional school, law, or medicine, or they want to go the graduate school route, they already have a very good idea because they are seeing these women, they are touching them, they are talking to them, they are hearing their stories, so they know what it is all about.
Yeah, that is so wonderful. And I just want to thank you. I know at any time you might need to get off the conversation, but I think education, as we all know on this show and people who are listening on the computers, definitely is a door opener and increases the economic standing of an individual. The more education you have, the more likely you will make more money. There are people we know who are exceptions to the rule who may not go to college and all of a sudden become billionaires. But again, those are the exceptions. So for anyone listening out there, again, sistermentors.org, wonderful program. I want to thank Dr. Lewis for being on. I want to bring Dr. Taffy Anderson on into the conversation. She's the OBGYN, and again, she had been on the show before and talking about breast cancer. Physical health is a serious issue in a lot of communities of color, not just African-American, Latino, Native American. The issue of obesity, the issue of teen pregnancy, there's so many things, asthma disparities. Again, Dr. Anderson is an OBGYN, and I want to talk to you about the fact that a lot of young ladies are not familiar with their body. They are not familiar with their reproductive parts. They are not familiar with their cycles, their menstrual cycles, and if it's not happening, do I need to go talk to the doctor? When do I need to get a checkup? So, Dr. Anderson, why don't you speak to that issue of young ladies and their female reproductive health and making sure they stay on track?
Yes, thank you, Joy, for inviting me back, and welcome to all the other panel members. That you hit the nail on the head. we are really lacking as African Americans and almost every all girls in the adolescent range who are just not familiar with their menstrual cycles and what's normal in a menstrual cycle. You know, back in the day when we were all growing up, we always, you know, if you remember, our mothers were telling us, this is what's going to happen, this is what's going to happen, you know, and you were prepared with your menstrual pads and everything. What I'm seeing in the office now is basically the girls don't understand when they're ovulating, you know, when their menstrual periods are irregular, when to come in. We're also facing, and you hit on it earlier, adolescent obesity. And in particular, in African-American girls, we are seeing an astronomical increase in their weight, and that's related to us, again, we're not sitting down at the dinner table. A lot of this is the family breakdown, where when we were growing up, we pretty much sat down at the table, and we all ate dinner, and, you know, we had our portions, and if you wanted a second portion, what did you do? You had to ask Mom. Well, now, you know, we're eating at fast food restaurants. We're eating, you know, food that is high in carbohydrates and fats. And therefore, we're seeing an increase in obesity. We're seeing an increase in diabetes in young girls. So all of this relates to our bodies. And, you know, it's really important right now as I'm hearing the mentoring programs and things like that, to bring in people that can talk to the young girls about their bodies and you know, how to eat appropriately, what is a normal menstrual cycle.
I want to talk to the issue of sexually transmitted diseases. I know, Terry, you're dealing with young ladies 11 to 18 years old. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So in your program, do you speak to them about the issue of sexual health? Because that's another big issue, protecting themselves if they do decide to engage. Unfortunately, I know based on statistics in terms of teen pregnancy rates, a lot of young teens who do become pregnant might have been abused before. Maybe their first sexual act was unwanted. This is based on the Black Women's Health Project website. It says that 23% of 14-year-olds and 30% of all 15-year-olds have had sexual intercourse. Again, I want to repeat that 23% of 14-year-olds, we didn't say 18, we didn't say 21, I said 14-year-olds, and 30% of all 15-year-olds have had sexual intercourse. This is something that has to be on the table. Terry, in your program, how do you speak to young ladies? Or if a young lady is pregnant and she comes to you, what do you say to her?
Well, I think before you can even talk to them or speak with them about where they are, one of the things our program does is we target specifically inner city youth where they do not have the family structure or the family backgrounds where, you know, the nurturing happens to kind of address some of these issues and to kind of, you know, the deterrence that we may have had. They don't have that. You know, a lot of them are living in households where their mothers were teenage mothers. It's commonplace for their aunts to be teenage mothers. And so history repeats itself or the behavior repeats itself. It's mirroring what is seen on a daily basis. So what our organization does as We Are Seeds, and our motto is helping girls make better choices, is to provide alternatives. And, you know, so the one thing in our prevention, we have a program called One Night Can Equal a Lifetime of Regret. And what we try to do is do it through a simulation process of parenting baby alive, where the young ladies have to take a baby home, and we program them to act like a regular baby and to show them the responsibility of raising a child. In our culture, in North Philadelphia, which is one of the areas that we, that's where we are mainly, it's okay for my girlfriend and I to have babies. That's a part of
where
the club.
Where did that come from? Where did that come from? I want to bring Miss Wadlington into that. Miss Wadlington, do you hear that from the young ladies in your group? Is it okay to for me and my girlfriend to have a baby? I mean, Terry hit it on the head. I mean, taking a baby home and realizing the needs of a baby, waking up in the middle of the night, the economic needs, the social, emotional needs of a child. Miss Wadlington, what do you experience with the young ladies in your group, and how do you talk to them about that issue?
Well, there are a lot of things that we see and experience in terms of the whole sexual health issue, we do have a session with STDs and HIV awareness because of the statistics that came out in 2008 with almost half of the population of teen girls being infected with an STD, which we should be alarmed about. But again, a lot of that comes from low self-esteem, and I can tell you Philadelphia is ranked among the top 10 cities with girls with the lowest self-esteem. And when you have low self-esteem, teen girls are more likely to engage in negative and destructive behavior that can scar them for life. So what we see is pretty much coming out of the way they feel about themselves and some other factors that are current in pop culture.
So what do you tell, Dr. Anderson brought about the issue of obesity, and in terms of the CDC, definitely there are disparities in the women of color in terms of obesity levels. It says almost 28% of non-Hispanic black teen girls aged 12 to 19, you know, are higher rates of their BMI. That's body mass index. I mean, Cheryl, you teach about style. I mean, everybody has a different body type. I mean, you know, some people can wear a short skirt, some have to wear a long skirt, some have to wear a three-quarter jacket. You know, some can wear the crop things. I mean, let's talk. Okay, I'm gonna go below the line, as I say. I don't want to see any more cracks in the butt. Cheryl, how do you teach the young ladies this pant does not fit you? I mean, you know, what do you say to them?
Well, you know, it's kind of simple in the sense that I don't know why we haven't said anything before with what we see, not only the teen girls, but their mothers, you know, walking through the street with the breasts hanging all out and the tattoos with the low-rise jeans and everything. But with one session we have of how to buy a stylish wardrobe on a budget, because when you're talking to teen girls, you have to have a hip factor or make it cool to with what you're saying about how they should dress. But
Yes. But
it really comes from also when a girl loves herself and understands how to wear something that complements her figure, which is what we do. And we also employed uniforms in our sessions. You know, the girls, we're not going to allow them to come in there wearing what they want to wear because we know what they're going to come in wearing. So they have an applied uniform where with that one uniform each week, they have to change it and accessorize it in a different manner, you know, because a lot of the girls are low income. And, you know, in the case that they, you know, you wear a different pair of shoes, put accessories with it, and it teaches them how to mix and match and work a wardrobe on a budget.
Right, right, definitely. That is so important.
And one that complements your figure, because we also see the girls coming in with these, the exercise bras. What do you call those? The jogging bras. I forgot the actual name of them. With their chest, with their breasts hanging on their stomachs, you know. The
yes.
whole thing about proper fit and lifting and having optimum support. Because we know 9 out of 10 women wear the wrong size bra. You know, and it's not okay to come in the classroom with a Victoria's Secret bra on, you know, with your boobies.
Mm-hmm.
Bouncing at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, because you have to ask yourself, what kind of attention do you want to attract? So we really try to get to the core of this dysfunctional fashion styles that we see, which can make you cringe.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I used to work actually when I was younger in a lingerie store, and we fit women with bras. Now, there are very few stores far in between that actually fit a woman for her bra. Now, I know there may be guys listening, and you're like, oh, my God. But let me tell you, this is a very important issue for women, especially if you have a very large breast that can cause back problems and pains, and you may have to get a breast reduction even. But if you're wearing a proper bra, it can at least alleviate some of the stress that's on your shoulders. Sometimes women have dents in their shoulders from their bra straps. So, guys, if you are listening, I know it may seem kind of odd, but it's a very important issue for women. I want to bring Uva back into the conversation. I was just reading on the National Institute for Mental Health website. This is dated April 10th, 2009. Black teens, especially girls, at high risk for suicide attempts. Again, that was April 10th, 2009, a National Institute of Mental Health. Black teens, especially girls, at high risk for suicide attempts. Mental health is a very important issue. We talked about morals. We talked about values. We talked about, you know, low income. You don't have a lot of money. You don't have a lot of support. Your self-esteem is down. I mean, well, where do you go? You can't finish school. Maybe nobody finished college, as we spoke about before with Dr. Lewis. You might be the first person, you know, finishing college, even going on to get a master's or PhD. Uva, what do you speak to your mentors about in terms of if a young person comes to your mentor and says, you know, I'm feeling this way, I'm not feeling good, I'm down, how do you intervene with that? What is your intervention strategy?
With our process, we have the benefit of having match support specialists or people who are dedicated to each individual match. That means that when a child expresses an issue, a challenge, something they're dealing with, if it is mental health, for example, and they have that conversation with their big brother, big sister in this case, then we instruct those big sisters to come back to their math support specialist and have a conversation around whatever the issue is so that we can then provide them guidelines to have conversations that will help support whatever the issue is. So I think we have the benefit of that one-to-one mentorship then allows us to really focus and hone in on whatever the issue is and provide resources that are for that specific child. We would not, for example, bring in every child who's in our program and have training sessions that are around a certain topic because sometimes they just don't relate to whatever the issues that child may be having. With this one-on-one mentorship process, it does allow for very individualized attention. Now, we try to provide the volunteers with as much information as we can, and when we feel that the problem goes beyond that person, then we, of course, have resources that we can reach out to or allow the volunteer to reach out to them as well and then provide some more heavy expertise, if you will. And we also have one of the things that we're starting in the fall this year is a program between Westchester University and children within the community of Westchester. Chester County is one of the counties where we serve children. We have identified, of course, that our girls are in crisis, and to that end, we've developed a program specific to girls. And every month, these girls are going to come together with their volunteers and speak about specific issues. And what's really exciting about this conversation today is that one of the speakers we have identified is Cheryl Ann from the Evaluer House. And I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that, Cheryl. But the bottom line is she is wonderful at what she does, and she'll be one of the people who will come in and speak to our young ladies about a lot of the issues that we have talked about during this conversation. We recognize that our girls need more than sometimes what they're getting at home. And that requires us to work as a community and bring in people who are subject matter experts to then provide them the information and support them. Sometimes what they have at home is not enough. Mentorship works, but mentorship also requires that we as a community work more closely together, and that's something that we're committed to doing.
Tara, you have a young lady on the call with you this morning. Yes, you said you have an 18-year-old?
Yes.
Was she in your program?
Yes, she is. She's been since the inception, 2003, since we started.
And what's her name?
Macy.
Macy, you want to tell me about your experience in Ms. Brown's program?
I'm sorry.
That's okay. We got a little backseat.
Yes. I had, the students having a good experience in her program. Basically, it helped me. As far as what I pointed into the right direction, which I needed to go, well, coming into the program, coming into the organization, I mean, I wasn't doing too good. But as I'm still in the organization and, you know, still learning different things and still growing, I realized who I really am. So it was, I mean, once again, like, it was really rough coming in. And now when I look back on it, and to this day, I still be thinking about certain things that I wouldn't have done if I hadn't came to the program. If I wasn't introduced to the program, I wouldn't learn certain things. I wouldn't, you know what who I am, like, except myself. And yes, it is kind of rough now, like peer pressure being in school and everything. You around people in the wrong way seem to be right, but at the end, it's like, you know, I have to pat myself on the back. Like, I did, you know, I did okay. I made a good decision. And the program, it really helped me in a lot of ways.
So how should young, I mean, we're adults, you know, and I know when you're a teenager, I have a teenager, and, you know, you might think we don't understand what you're going through, and it's a different time in terms of the sexual issues, in terms of drug issues, in terms of, you know, violence issues in school, even the safety issue. We haven't even talked about the issue of safety, and it seems an increase in violence between young women, just women, period, not just women of color. How, as an adult, should we approach a teen, Macy? How, as an adult, should we support you as a team? How, as an adult, should we show you the direction that you need to go in to succeed?
The best way, to be honest, I would say don't just be too quick to jump into it, because it's really nothing that y'all, and I'm not just saying y'all, but nothing that adults can really do. I think where it can start at, where it can help, is the child has to, and the young lady or whatever, the young adult has to be able to come to that person, and they might not be ready to do it right away. They might not be, at the point where they just, come out and say, I'm going through this. It might take some time, but they will never know what's going on if the person hasn't opened up and, said what's going on, because you just can't, nobody's a mind reader. So once you open up your mouth, that would make all the difference. So they would really be able to jump in and see where is it that you need help and give their advice once you, made up in your mind that I'm going to say something because evidently it's bothering me. So mm-hmm. I think that's the first step.
So the issue, it sounds like trust. I mean, for all the guests on there, that's a really big issue, is developing trust. And I'm sure all of you had resistance, I'm sure, from young ladies who've been in your program. They didn't trust you in the beginning. And so it takes a little bit of time. I want to go back to Dr. Anderson because, again, health is a very important issue and it can affect all aspects of your life. And Dr. Anderson is a breast cancer survivor. Dr. Anderson, you want to talk a little bit about your story and how you found out you had breast cancer and what steps you took to take care of that?
Well, basically, I was working very hard, 12-hour days, as you can imagine, working in Philadelphia.
I'm going to defer to you.
Okay, we can hear you, lady. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Anderson.
Okay. I was working in Philadelphia delivering babies and doing gynecology, and I actually had a breast mass a couple of years earlier and had a biopsy, and it was negative. And my primary care physician felt a mass in my breast on a routine exam, and she sent me back to my surgeon. And my surgeon said, Taffy, I really think it's scar tissue, but we need to watch it. And I listened, but I really didn't listen because I watched it. She said, we need to watch it. And so I watched it.
Well, because you're a doctor. Because you're a doctor.
Yes,
what do you need another doctor to tell you,
Absolutely. Physician, heal thyself, So
mm-hmm.
I watched it. And I'll tell you, it was about a year before I got a mammogram, and it was growing. And, I convinced myself it was benign, this positive positive thinking.
Right.
And by the time I realized that it was cancerous, I was actually an advanced stage 2 breast cancer, and I was out for 2.5 years. Treatment. Yeah.
And see, you're a doctor. I want the young ladies and even men, because you have women in your lives. This is a doctor. And not to put you in the spot, Dr. Anderson, but she is a doctor.
Put me on the spot.
Okay, she's a doctor. She's an OBGYN. So she's talking to women every single day about their breast health, about their ovaries, their uterus, vaginal care, all these things.
Yeah.
And she became, a breast cancer. She became a person who developed breast cancer and didn't get her checkups. She's a doctor. So for those of you who are not doctors, I understand you might be fearful about getting a checkup. You might be nervous. Oh, my God, the mammogram hurts. It's going to squish my breast or something. Go get it done. It will save your life. Dr. Anderson is blessed to be here this day because of the stage of her cancer. We are really blessed to have her today. I mean, I get very emotional about this because I know how scary it is for people to go find out bad news. Women of color, we are not getting tested for HIV. As women of color, we are dying at the highest rates and being diagnosed at the highest rates of having HIV. We got to wake up, black women. You got to wake up. You got to have these conversations with your partners. You got to have these conversations with yourself. Go take care of your health. Because without your health, you can't succeed at education. You can't succeed at, your money situation. You can't succeed at your relationships because you won't be here if you don't take care of your health, okay? I'm sorry, I get very passionate about those kind of things.
If I can just add to that, Joy, and a lot of you hit the nail on the head. A lot of it is fear, but also a lot of it, and listen to your panel, we as African-American women are very busy, and we have a tendency to put everyone above ourselves. And that's just our tendency. And that's something that's been brought, I mean, we bring traditions down through generations. And African-American women have been taught to take care of the family, do everything, take care of grandma, grandpa, everyone. But we leave ourselves last. And the I was a typical African-American breast cancer patient who presents in the late stages, because most of it is because we're taking care of everyone else. And I was taking care of my patients. You're right. Go in and get checked and just put everything aside and just go and get your mammogram and do it. I wish I had done it.
Yeah. I want to bring Ms. Wadlington back into the conversation. And any of you could answer this question. I'm going to say the word money. Now, you know, we love to spend some money. You know, as blacks, we are some of the high, you know, consumption rates to go out and buy a new pair of shoes. I need a new dress. Girl, I got to get my hair did. You know how much it costs for a black woman to get her hair did, if I say it like that? I mean, a relaxer or braids. I mean, braids alone, $150. You want to get a relaxer, $75. How are we going to teach women to deal with their money? Because that is connected to our self-esteem also. Ms. Wadlington, do you have that conversation with the young ladies in your group?
Well, of course, because that's why we implement financial literacy, and actually we have several sessions on that. When we bring in experts from the banks and to talk to girls about money management in regards to, okay, you may want this $1,000 handbag, but do you know what you can do with $1,000? And also, as it relates to hair historically has been a major important issue among black women that we have not fully talked about yet, and it dates back to slavery, where black women had to hide their hair because it was a threat to the female slave master or their wife and other people, so to speak. But
we have the issue of good hair and bad hair. Actually, Chris Rock of all people, I found out he's going to be making a documentary. It might have almost finished, about black women and their hair, because like you said, that is a serious issue. I mean, if your hair is straight and you're light, oh, you're trying to be white. You know what I mean? If your hair is not natural, I mean, seriously, let's have a conversation.
Yeah.
If you're dark skin and you have a natural, then, you know, you're back to Africa. I mean, but as, you know, NDIRE said, I am not my hair. You know, that does not define me as a person. And I think we have to respect each other as black women, that if a woman has her hair this way or that way, that's her style. But that doesn't define completely who she is as a human being, you know.
But also, Joy, let me add this in. And one of the whole purposes of starting Evalore, which I did years ago with the Evalore Image Consultants, is because I found that there has not been a full healing process among black women in terms of our experiences in America. When you talk about the ideas of us being able to take time out for ourselves or to adorn ourselves, there are a lot of social and psychological things that we have to deal with on a daily basis, where we make fun of ourselves, again, like you were talking about, to put someone else down because they may have light skin. I've had one of the girls in our program was attacked because she was a black girl with green eyes. So the idea of not talking about, well, what it, they also, society tends to make us believe that something is wrong with the way we look. And so our whole message is, you are fine just the way you are.
Definitely,
and we need
definitely
more conversations about that, where for generations, women have not heard that. And particularly when I see women come to me and they say, well, I got big hips. I said, well, honey, I don't have big hips, and big hips are celebrated in your culture.
Mm-hmm.
You're fine.
Definitely, definitely. Terry, I want to bring you into the conversation a little bit. Let's talk about the issue of relationships. We haven't hit on that. How do we teach young women to date? Because did anybody teach any of us how to date? You know, my grandmother, it was funny. My grandmother's not with me anymore, God bless her. But my grandparents used to communicate to me through newspaper articles. And one day when I was younger, it was after I had my daughter, she mailed me an article about not putting all my eggs in one basket. Now, when I went to go visit her, she didn't mention the article. She said a couple other little things, but she didn't directly mention the article. But that is just one of the ways that parents or grandparents or people in the family or communicate sometimes to children or young adults. She sent me this article about not putting all my eggs in one basket and taking my time. How do we talk to these young ladies about not jumping on the first train, so to speak? Anybody,
well,
help me out.
Joy, I'm going to share that question and answer with my colleague. But I want to say what you mentioned was you had a system of people who were able to give you feedback. And I'm very passionate about this because I think it's critical that these programs that are being offered are offered and that they're existing because we have to face the reality. Our young people, most of them, and especially in the inner city, do not have, they're not going home to someone that can critique mm-hmm. their behaviors or their
yeah.
choices. Their selection.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I came, I brought a gentleman home, and his name was James, and my mother, she was in the kitchen. I brought him in the house, and she said, "What's wrong with him? Is he retarded?" And I said, "Mom, you just, you know, you don't like anyone that I like."
Yeah.
Later on, you know, and I'm dealing with this guy. He came to my mother's house high off of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she didn't know that from the kitchen, but there was a detector that she could sense that said something's
mm-hmm.
wrong with him. And so,
mm-hmm.
you know, the problem is our young ladies they're coming home with these guys, but there's no one there to
mm-hmm.
be critical of their choice elections, or their parents are in the same boat that they're in, or, you know, the uncle has five girlfriends, or, you know, the brother has six girlfriends, and they live there. I mean, you know, so I think it's, you know, you can't really answer that or you can't answer that alone for them unless you have, you know, these kind of support systems and ingrained in the community that can help, you know, help them identify. That's a poor choice. That's a poor
yeah,
selection.
Yeah.
You know, you don't, in my case, I had a boyfriend that was 18 in the ninth grade. What was wrong with me?
Right.
But that's the reality, and that's what exists. So, and
I'm
going to defer to my colleague, Mr. Will.
Mr. Will, yes, we have a gentleman on the call. Please, can you speak to that issue? How we have about 3 minutes left, and I want to again thank everyone for being on the call this morning. I want to thank all of our listeners for being on the call this morning. Yes, tell us, how do we teach these young ladies to approach the young men today to try to start a relationship?
Well, number one, I want to say thanks for having us. And my main point as far as teaching young women and young men as well, but young women specifically, is to model behavior. So their support system plays a great, great, great deal in how they're going to turn out. You know, a lot of things that we see nowadays and experience are cyclical. They go in cycles. So usually, well, not usually, but often, you know, young people do what they see. They repeat
mm-hmm.
cycles of
mm-hmm.
People in their lives from the past. And if we as
mm-hmm.
adults present better role models and for ourselves, then the thought process is that we're increasing the chances that they're going to make better choices for themselves as well. Going back
mm-hmm.
to the previous, the previous topic you had a second ago about young ladies and their self-esteem and that kind of thing, you know, from a male's perspective, a real male's perspective, there's nothing more important than to see a confident woman. When
mm.
you're confident, it's attractive. And ambitious,
right.
That's attractive. You know, weak to a real, you know, male is not attractive.
Mm-hmm.
More of someone who has flaws in their own personality, seeking someone like that out. So,
right.
I mean, what can we do? I mean, we can just be better adults. You know, establish better support systems for our young people, and I mean, try to defeat the ills.
Try to be there for them.
The
yeah.
ills of society, because the people are very impressionable, and society is very, 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 very fast moving. And usually,
That's okay. No, we have 1 minute left, so I just want to thank everyone for being on this morning. Again, we had Uva Coles from the Big Brothers Big Sisters. If you're trying to reach out to her, the website is www.bbbs.org. We have Cheryl Ann Wadlington. Her address is, I put it in the chat room, it's can you say that?
www.evolurhouse.org. That's evolurhouse.org.
Evolurhouse.org. We also have Terry J. Brown. She's from We Are Seeds, and her website is www.weareseeds.org. I want to thank all of you for being on this morning. Thank all the listeners on the computer and the chat room for tuning in. Tune in next week, a very serious issue. No, the rape documentary by Aisha Shahida Simmons. Again, this is a black feminist educational organizing tool. It's being used in a global movement to end violence against women and children. Again, that's the No Rape documentary. I did another show about domestic violence, and as we know, that is a serious issue that's not going away. It's not only in communities of color. It's all over the world, all over the United States. So please tune in next week, 11 a.m. Eastern. I want to thank everyone again for coming on the show. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, you know, and be productive. And remember, support is the most important thing we're hearing today for these young people. Everybody have a wonderful Saturday. Thank you so much.
You do the same, Joy.
Check it out. Check it out. It's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.